Chapter 34. The Twins. I stare at the knife in my hands, watching the ward's pulse and glow. Mum says there's no demon bone inside, but it holds power the same way horror weapons do.
Magic's like a thing alive, Darren, Mum used to say. Ain't got a will of its own, so it's drawn to emotions like a moth to light.
There's a lot of emotion imprinted on Mum's knife. More than other weapons that saw heavy use in the war. Its mystery is deeper, darker than just killing demons. Its aura is hungry. Folk in Tibet's brook always kept their manners when Mam was about, but I could smell their fear. There's a story there, and the knife is part of it. I rub its bone handle, worn smooth from decades of use. I could read the knife, pulling magic through the blade and into myself in an attempt to unlock its secrets. But it feels like a violation of Mam's privacy.
She's dead, I remind myself. Ain't got a need for privacy anymore.
But I don't want to believe it. Reading the knife would be admitting she's gone forever. Ain't ready for that. My fingers drift along the blade and the cutting wards throb, pulling at my aura even as they sharpen the blade, eager to bite into my flesh.
Darren?
Selen's voice startles me out of my trance and I sit up straight, suddenly realising how light the sky has become.
Sun's coming up, Selen says. We should head out before someone realises we're sleeping in their hayloft.
Sleeping? I want to laugh.
Don't think I've had more than an hour a night since we found the remains of the warded children.
Since we found Mam's knife.
Selen cried herself to sleep for the first few nights, but now she's more focused on finding Olive than mourning her sister. I wish I had her strength of will, but I can't stop staring at the knife, feeling lost, like I'm drowning. Like Dan must have felt when he was pulled down into the core. The father waits in darkness. I suppress a shiver, sliding Mam's knife back into the sheath I've made, uncured leather looped through my belt. My hand drifts to it, instinctively now, assuring myself it's still there a dozen times a day. It's taken longer than expected to make the journey. A well-provisioned messenger on horseback can make it from Cutter's Hollow to Everarm's Bounty in 2 weeks. On foot, it's taken thrice that. But I don't dare use magic to speed our feet again. Not unless all the core is at our heels. We were lucky to survive it the once. Selen had some money when we started out, but it quickly dwindled, then vanished entirely. We've had to stop periodically to hunt, find shelter from the weather, and do odd jobs for food and lodging. We've kept the hoods of our warded cloaks up in the night, but there's been no sign of demons. I've got a pile of logs in the back, Selen notes. Might give us breakfast if I chop them? Where did a princess learn to cord wood? I ask.
Still a cutter. Selen smells indignant.
Dad told me to swing an axe as soon as I could lift one.
We climb down from the hayloft and back to the road while it's still dark, finding a shady spot to clean up and handle our necessaries while I acclimate to the dawn. I can hear folk rousing at the farm. And once they're up and out in the yard, Selen and I appear on the road, making no effort to hide our approach. Banner in the yard tells me the owner of this property is a warrior of the Metending, the second largest tribe in New Crasia. The next thing I notice is the casual dress. The women working the fields and yard wear scarves in their hair, but they don't cover everything, and vary in colour. Their faces are bare. Their dresses are conservative, but no more so than women wear back in the brook. Certainly ain't the wrist-to-ankle black robes Nanny Mika used to wear. I wonder if she's all right. The women look up as we approach, eyes flicking first to the bow slung over my shoulder, and then to Selen's leggings and bare arms. But they make no comment.
Is there work we might do in exchange for some food?
My Crasian is out of practice, but I can make conversation when I need to. Soon, Selen is swinging an axe, and I am at the archery range,
having tea and making awkward small talk with the warrior who owns the farm and his sons while we take turns shooting. I'm good at shooting things that aren't rushing to kill me. And a sharper eye than mine, and I can sense even the slightest breeze. I hold my own against the sons, and think to let the father win to spare his honour. But he is everything Mending archery masters are said to be. With every bullseye, we take a stride back, until we're just firing into the sky to arc the shots. Still, he hits centre target every time. "Aye, why didn't they put you to work too?" Selin asks, when we're back on our way, bellies full and with a sack of vegetables in her pack. "They saw my bow," I tell her. "The Mehending are the far-reaching tribe, missile experts. They assumed I was a warrior. It would be dishonourable to make me work for a meal." "They didn't see the spear and shield on my back?" Selin asks. "Well, obviously you're carrying them for me." I wink and dodge her swat in response, but the irritation in her scent is real. The food is gone 2 days later, as the capital city of Everarm's Bounty comes into view. We're tired, hungry, and both of us have smelled better. We haven't spoken more than necessary in days. "This had better be worth it," Selin mutters. "Only hope we've got," I say. "Olive's dad, my blood father, is married to Inevera, the only seer more famous than Aunt Leisha." Selin doesn't reply, and I catch pain and sadness in her scent. Both of us are struggling. Like Hollow, Everarm's Bounty is protected from demons, but the Krasians use massive stone obelisks graven with wards rather than shape their streets and fields to the twisting demands of the symbols. The giant pillars reach out from the city like the spokes of a wheel, protecting countless acres of rich farmland. It is harvest time, and the fields bustle with workers. But as with the other farms we visited, adherence to the strict dress Krasians once uniformly embraced has fallen off. Occasionally, there is a woman in full blacks and veil, but most look little different from Thesan women, with kerchiefs in their hair. All look well-fed, and often there is laughter while they work. The land is prosperous, and all share in it. The prosperity works against us as we enter the city proper. Here, there are more men in Sharoon blacks and women in veils, the materials pressed and clean, but it seems more a fashion choice than law. Selin and I look like beggars in contrast, and the locals shy away from us, hands on their purses. There are bakeries and sweet shops that smell so good my mouth fills with water, and plentiful bookshops devoted to religion and the sciences. Clothing shops do brisk custom, and there are theatres and museums. Folk laugh at outdoor restaurants as street entertainers play for coin, and even these look askance at us. The ever-present obelisks are at almost every intersection, often at the centre of water fountains or sitting atop intricately designed pedestals. The guards to the walled inner city shift their spears, eyes narrowing as we approach. A few that were previously milling about drift toward the gate, watching us. "Sure this is a good idea?" Selin asks. I smile. And often I get to impress Selin Cutter. "Aye, watch this." A hulking warrior appears with the red veil of a drillmaster around his throat. I walk right up to him, ignoring his threatening glare. With a smile, I give a polite bow. "I am Darren Asu Arlen, on Bales, on Brook. It is urgent I speak to my blood father, Ahman Asu Hoshkamin Amjardir, the Shah Damar Ka." The drillmaster's eyes widen, and several of the guards stare with mouths open. For a moment, that seems to stretch on into minutes. No one says anything. Then the drillmaster turns to the nearest warrior and gives him a shove. "Stop gawking and deliver the message, fool!" He turns to the others. "Open the gate! And prepare a palanquin!" The palanquin bobs, slightly, with the steps of the men carrying the poles. But sunk into the silk feather pillows, I hardly notice. There is a jug of cold water, warm couscous with spiced meat and vegetables, dried fruit and nuts, and an incense burner. no doubt more for the benefit of others than ourselves. The incense threatens to give me a headache, but this deep in a crowded city, I am glad for its dulling of my senses. Selen and I eat hungrily as we watch the inner city go by through curtains of impossibly thin, translucent silk.
Night, Selen says through a mouthful of food.
You call me princess, but I ain't ever had a pack of soldiers fall over themselves to put a silk pillow under my bum.
Why didn't you do this a week ago?
She's got a right to know, though I don't like talking about it.
Most everyone in Thesa thinks my dad is the deliverer and my blood father is half-demon, I say.
Here, it's the reverse. And if my dad is half-demon to them,
you are too, Selen finishes.
Aye, I say. Mam always said religion makes folks unpredictable, that we couldn't trust folk we didn't know, but here in the capital, no one hinders the Jardir family.
And you count as family?
Selen asks.
Ahman Jardir delivered me, I say, feeling my throat tighten.
The son of his fallen best friend, in the deep dark below the world. Mum says his hands were still wet with Dad's blood when he smacked out my first cry.
That means something in Kraja. Think that would mean something anywhere.
Selen lays a gentle hand on my arm.
Last time he visited, I think I was 43rd in line for the throne, I note.
Selen pulls back suddenly, glaring at me. Her scent is unreadable.
What? I ask.
Darren Bales. She swats me on the arm.
Are you telling me that for all these years you've been making fun at me and Olive, you've been a ripping prince?
I roll my eyes.
Barely. If the 43 ahead of me died, they'd add a 44th before letting a Cheen take the throne.
Still counts, Selen says. Wait till I tell Olive, she's going to spit. The palanquin pauses at the palace steps for a while as messengers run back and forth. They don't disturb us, and by the time we are moving again, Selen is asleep on the pillows, and my eyes have grown heavy as well. It's been a long time since I relaxed on a pillow with a full stomach in a safe place. The bearers carry us away from the main entrance to the family wing. There are more guards, but they have been alerted and let us pass without delay. Then the palanquin tilts as they carry it up the broad steps. Selen is jolted awake.
They don't need to carry us up the ripping steps.
Believe me when I say it ain't worth arguing, I tell her. They take it as an insult to their hospitality if visiting royals have to climb a step on their own.
Where are they taking us? Selen asks.
They're delaying, I say. If they were prepared, we'd start in the throne room. Reckon our showing up unexpected turned everyone's day upside down. Mam used to love this game. I think of how Mam used to chuckle to herself, seeing everyone scramble when we skated in, unannounced, and showed up at the gate. The servants and Demarja always smelled of irritation, but the pleasure in Jardir's scent at seeing us overpowered everything. The memory makes my heart ache, and my hand drifts of its own accord to grip the handle of Mam's knife. Olive's dad is king of everything here, I go on. Might be lounging in a silk sleep shirt in his library reading a book, or he might be on the other side of the duchy blessing crops and kissing babies. No telling how long it will take before he's ready to see us. The palanquin is set down, and the curtains are pulled back to reveal the twins have come to greet us. In the meantime, they stall us with family.
Oh, cousin, Roshva pouts. But of course we had to come. Who else would have had the nerve to tell you that you smell like a goat and need a bath and fresh clothes before you tracked us through the sacred halls?
Arik snickers at that, and I press my lips together to keep my own smile from breaking out. It will only make things worse if I encourage her. Roshva and Arik have the same father, the famous Roger Halfgrip, first jongler to learn to charm demons with his music. Like my dad, Halfgrip died during the war, but he's always been a hero to me. Despite being born to different mothers, Mam always called Roshva and Arik the twins. Both have cinnamon hair, darker than their dad's fabled flame red, but a coveted rarity in Kraja. Their skin is lighter than Olive's, though nothing like the pale white shown in portraits of Roger Halfgrip. In the north, it might pass for too much time in the sun,
But here in the palace, surrounded by full-blood Krasians, it's enough to draw notice. But the twins attract attention in any event. They say Rojva's grandmother, Damaja Inevera, is the most beautiful woman in Krasia, and I ain't one to argue. At 14, all can see Rojva is following in her footsteps. A pouch of unfinished demon bones hangs from her waist, but she looks decidedly uncomfortable in the white silk robe and headscarf of a Krasian priestess in training. And Arik, I hear Selin's breath catch as she looks at him, and the scent she gives off makes jealousy surge in my chest. Arik, Asu Roger, Am In, Am Kaji wears brightly coloured robes and carries a fine instrument case on his back. He's played the Comanche his entire life, but he's more warrior than jongleur. Tall, with bunched muscle, and nothing of a tumbler's agility. His heavy jaw frames a face that looks sculpted from marble. He has Krasian features, but his skin is light as any in the north, and his hair is more orange than the rusty red that crops up here and there in Krasia. He puts his hand out to shake in the northern fashion. I take it, knowing what is coming next. Arik clutches my hand tight, pulling me in close as his left fist balls and throws a hook at my shoulder. The punch is playful, but as with Selin's brothers, it is also an attempt at dominance in front of the women. I'm ready for the blow, turning my hand slippery just long enough to slide from his grasp. I duck the fist and take a quick step back out of range as Arik stumbles and loses a bit of dignity. I could hit back, but to what end? It would only escalate things, and I doubt he'd even feel it. Arik barks a laugh. One day, arm bales. You'll need to move faster than a snail on crutches. I smile, despite the tiresome game. I've missed my cousins, and we've never been more in need of friendly faces. Rojva opens her arms to embrace me, but then sniffs and draws back, holding her nose. You may have a proper greeting when you've had a bath. Stink clings to him, even when he's good and scrubbed, Selin says. Honest word, we've tried. Rojva titters, and Arik throws his head back to laugh, as if it's better to stink of perfume than accept your own scent. I sweep an arm towards Selin. Selin, Var Garrod, Arm Cutter, Arm Hollow. Meet the twins, Rojva and Arik. The children of Roja Halfgrip, Selin cuts in. Rojva smiles at that, but her brother's face darkens. Welcome. Rojva gives a shallow bow. It is good to know our father's name is still known in the north. Known? Selin snorts. Man's practically a saint. Your father is renowned in the warrior halls of Krasia. Arik's bow is much lower than his sister's, meeting Selin's eyes boldly. It is said none can match him in a feat of strength. A nice word about her da will always set Selin smiling. But this time it bothers me. I don't like her smiling at Arik like that. And I definitely don't like the way he's looking at her. Again, the images flash in my mind from when our auras touched. I'm not the only boy Selin's kissed. Not by a far sight. Got no right to be jealous. But I am. I need a deep breath to calm myself. Rojva tilts her head, eyes flicking to Selin and back to me. She moves forward, her playful reluctance gone as she takes my arm. Come. Let us see you to your comforts. Rojva takes off her headscarf the moment the servants close the door behind us, shaking out waves of cinnamon hair. Known her all my life, but still I can't help staring. Rojva's always been pretty as a sunset. I catch a whiff of annoyance from Selin, and for once the smell pleases me. Rojva turns to a mirror, examining her hair. Another few moments and that dreadful scarf would have flattened it for the rest of the day. She turns to Selin. Can you manage a bath without servants? She gestures with her hand to a screen at the far side of the room. There is moisture in the air, and I can smell the soap. Even I am eager for a scrub. I think I can manage. Selin is already moving for the screen. Thanks be to Everarm, Rojva says. The servants will all tst to mother if I so much as unbind my hair in front of the son of Arlen, since we're intended. Selen stops short.
I what?
Marriage broker nonsense, I say quickly. Rojva's scent is playful, but I'm afraid her games will get me in more trouble than I want. I'm on some list with 100 other eligible bachelors, but until Rojva gets promised to someone else, we're considered courting.
Indeed, it is nonsense.
Rojva agrees, but the hand she lays on my arm implies otherwise.
Darren is practically my brother,
and indeed low on the list. She gives my arm a squeeze.
But fear not, cousin. In Evora, one day you will find a bride with exotic taste.
Why, what's that supposed to mean? I demand. Rojva doesn't reply. She pulls away, gesturing to Selen.
Come, I'll see you to the bath while I change into something with a bit more colour.
She glides across the room and slips behind the screen as Selen scowls at her back. She throws an annoyed glance my way before following. I turn to Arik, who has picked up Selen's spear and shield and set his feet in a fighting stance. He spins the weapon through a series of sharukin, testing its reach and balance. Then he taps his finger on the point, a gentle touch that nonetheless draws a drop of blood.
Fine weapon, he grunts. A bit long and heavy for you, I think.
It's Selen's, I tell him. Arik's eyebrows leap into his orange hair as he turns to look at the silhouettes of the women in the screen.
She is Sharun Ting.
Stabbed a rock demon in the heart, I say. Arik gives a low whistle, and it's my turn to be annoyed.
Now, that's a woman.
He lays down the spear and takes up my bow, stringing it in a quick and easy motion. You prefer to kill from afar, like some Mehding Grey? The words are derisive. The Krasian army would have collapsed long ago without the Mehending bows and war machines, but other warriors call them grey robes, because they're smart enough not to fight demons in close when they don't have to. Prefer not to kill at all. I pat the pipes hanging at my hip. Had my way, I'd just play my pipes. Arik shakes his head. Would that we could trade lives, cousin. I am forbidden to fight.
Still?
I ask. That can't be right. This is my weapon, so they say. Arik slaps his command case in disgust. I come from an unbroken line of warriors dating back centuries. My mother wore Sharun black and led thousands of warriors on the walls of Docktown, holding back an Alagai horde even as I rode in her womb. My grandfather was bodyguard to Shah Damarkar himself. He looks down at his multicoloured robes and makes a spitting noise. Instead, I am denied the spear and forced to dress like some Qin jester to honour my father, who died in shame in some Greenland prison. Rojva steps from around the screen. Her face is serene, but even from across the room I can smell her anger.
Shame? Our father died taking a spear meant for my mother, and his music turned the tide in countless battles of Sharak-Kar. His glory was boundless, but Arik would rather idolise his Baba Hasik, who died a castrated traitor, than wear a coloured robe in his father's honour.
Arik bares his teeth at his sister, but she stares him down. Rojva's mother is more royal than Arik's, and Rojva is inviolate in her clerical white. Still, the sudden anger I smell on Arik puts me on edge.
Pine for the spear if you wish, brother, but speak no lies about father.
Rojva moves to a wardrobe near the bath, selecting an armful of dresses and retreating back to the screen.
Why not just tell Jardir you want to be a warrior?
I keep my voice flat, acting like Arik doesn't smell like he's about to flip the table. Arik laughs, his anger stink dissipating with a smell of resignation. As if my wishes matter when I have so famous a father. I blow out a breath. Know what that feels like. Ain't exactly a Parcheen myself. Boys got carry their dad's weight along with their own.
Guess it's good I enter, boy,
Selen says, emerging from behind the screen in a beautiful blue dress, cut in the Angerian style.
My dad's carrying 300 pounds just in his belly.
Rojva laughs at the joke, but Arik and I just stare at Selen, whom I've seldom seen wear anything so feminine.
All she's got are white robes and frilly debutante gowns.
Selim flicks her hand over the dress, annoyed.
You look great, I say.
Selim catches me staring and balls a fist.
Now ain't a good time to add a punchline, Darren. You and Oliver are the ones who throw shadow at folk about their clothes, I say.
Aye, fair, Selim allows. I can tell she feels Olive's absence even more keenly. It's like a part of us is missing.
I don't know what you're complaining about, Rojava huffs. Our ambassador in the north sends me all the latest fashions.
The words draw my eyes as Rojava steps back behind the screen. No doubt she thinks the watercoloured paper shows only silhouettes, but unlike the others, I can see through it quite clearly. She unfastens something, and her robes seem to blow away like smoke. I feel a rush of blood colour my cheeks and turn away a bit too quickly. Selin's eyes flick to the screen, then back to me. She scowls. Rojava emerges in an emerald green dress with a lace bodice and ruffled straps. Her flowing skirts flare to show off her calves as she spins.
What do you think?
Selin catches me staring and I can smell her irritation. Ruffles are a bit last season. Rojava deflates at the words, and Selin's scent changes from annoyance to satisfaction.
It's not as if anyone other than you will ever see me in it, Rojava laments. Women are beginning to wear colour throughout Everarm's bounty, and I'm forever trapped in white.
She gives a sad shake of her head.
You boys bemoan the weight of your fathers, but the burden is no less for women. Mother is Damaji Ting of the Khaji, and I am her only daughter. I was destined for the white before I was even born.
Selin looks a little abashed.
I've seen paintings of your grandmother wearing colours. Won't you be Damaja one day?
Rojava laughs, a sound like a tinkling fountain.
There is only one Damaja. It is not a title that can be passed. It will die with my grandmother until the dice call another. The last was 3,000 years ago, and it may be so again.
She shrugs. I do not covet the pillow throne in any event.
Be glad of that, cousin, a voice says from the door. The throne has a weight greater than fathers and mothers combined.
We turn to see Crown Prince Khaji, the Deliverer's eldest grandson, and first in line for the Skull Throne of New Krasia. A year older than me, Khaji is tall, slender, and graceful, like some majestic bird. Already he wears the white robe and jeweled turban of a full Dharma, but at his belt are warded silver knuckles and an alagai tail, the signs of a warrior priest. Selin straightens at the sight of him.
Selin Var Garid, meet Dharma Khaji.
I lean close to her, but do not drop my voice. Khaji is king of everything in training.
Ah, got it, Selin says,
as Rojava puts a hand to her mouth to cover a smile.
Khaji is composed as always as he comes forward. I've never been able to read his sense, so I can't tell if my casual introduction annoys him. He is unflappable. But that doesn't mean I stop trying. Too many people bow and scrape to Khaji day and night. Ain't good for him. I'm one of the few who can get away with giving him a poke now and again.
We've met before, daughter of Garid, Khaji says with a formal bow. You were still in your mother's arms, but I remember.
He looks around.
This is the first time in 15 years we've all been together. If Olive were here, the reunion would be complete.
The words are spoken casually, but I feel his eyes on us, searching for information on the mention of Olive might shake free. Selin doesn't take the bait, spreading her skirts in a perfect, if out of character, curtsy.
Good to see you again, Prince Khaji. I've come from grandfather, Khaji says when nothing else is forthcoming. Shah Damarkar is preparing, and will see you as soon as he is able.
Preparing means his wife won't let him say hello until she casts her dice on it, I tell Selin.
Of course, Rojava agrees, still admiring herself in a mirror. You show up, out of nowhere, looking like a beggar, and travelling alone with the daughter of Hollow's greatest general. Of course Tika won't let him see you without a casting.
Sounds like she's the king of everything then, Selin observes. And everyone, even Khaji, has a laugh at that.
So why are you here? Rosa asks. It must be quite the tale. Did your parents not approve the match?
I what?
It takes me a moment to realise what she's asking. Then suddenly my face flushes hot. Knight, you think we're here to elope?
Fuck!
Disgust fills Selen's scent and expression, more than necessary if you ask me.
Be like marrying my brother!
The words wrap around me, like a curtain blocking out the light. But they are freeing, too. Now that I know what I am to her, I understand what she must be to me. For once I don't have to guess, to overthink every word and scent. Well, I meant no offence, Rochefort says. It seemed a logical assumption, you both coming of age, after all. And why else would you arrive alone? This is the real reason they stayed with us. I spent more than a few winters here, but Kaji spent most of his time with his tutors. Rochefort was bossy and Arek was always looking for a fight. I was never as close to my Krasian cousins as I was to Selen and Olive. Anything they learn will go straight to Jardir and Enevra to help them prepare for our audience. Normally, that would be fine. But with Leisha and Olive both missing, Hollow is vulnerable. It isn't something I want getting around. I'm here to tell it to Bloodfather, and none other.
Nonsense, cousin, Arek says.
You are family. Your enemies are our enemies.
My brother is a little too eager to have his first enemy, Rochefort says. But he isn't wrong, cousin.
I'm a little ashamed when I realise they mean the words. There is no lie in their sense. Thanks, I shuffle, unable to meet their eyes. But I ain't sure myself who my enemies are, and some of the secrets I'm keeping ain't mine. I've a right to seek my bloodfather's advice before any other.
Of course, cousin.
Kaji bows, already turning to go. I will inform grandfather.
An escort will take you to him at nightfall.